Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Henrik Fangen. This is Red Ice Radio. We are very glad to have you with us today. RedIce.tv is the website. Please check it out for more radio videos, our TV show, and also, of course, our busy news section. Reinhardt is here sitting in, co-hosting with us today. Thank you for getting up early. I know you're a bit under the weather today as well, Reinhardt.
Glad to be here.
Very good. So our topic today is going to be about Pizzagate, going over this as much as we can as possible. Our guest is Reality Call. She's been making a lot of good videos, I think about the last month specifically on this kind of topic, going from spirit cooking and now into the Podesta controversy, into the Pizzagate, you know, controversy as well. Thank you for joining us today, Reality Calls.
Thank you for having me.
Well, very good. I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a good topic to cover, you know, because I've, as I told you earlier, you know, Reality Calls, so I've been doing, well, we've been doing this radio show for 10 years, and I've been talking, we came from a conspiracy angle, if you will, and then slowly moved into more nationalist politics and pro-European identity politics and these kinds of things. And one thing that has been with us from the start is stories like this. Things like this have been bubbling up to the surface. You know, we used to talk with people like David Icke, right? And many people think he's, you know, crazy in many of the things that he talks about or whatever. But one of the issues that he's been very vehemently hammering over the years, over the decades, really, that he's been looking into these global elite networks and everything else, is this issue of pedophilia and the pedophile networks, child trafficking, sex rings, and these kinds of things. And I think that Pizzagate is it's not something that is isolated, that stands on itself, that has popped out, and all of a sudden we're seeing something that we've never seen before. This is actually, for those who are in the know, for those that have been doing their research over the years, knows that now and then this ugly beast is showing the tip of its you know, head to us, and we can actually see and look into what's going on. But so we'll get into this, you know, and talk more about these connections and everything else. But I wanted to begin with your Reality Calls and just see what, how you stumbled into this and what the angle was when you started making videos about this. I don't know if you were into any of this, you know, these kinds of topics before, or if this opened up this whole world to you.
Yeah. So like you said, I mean, this kind of stuff's been going on for decades, and it's been reported even in some mainstream media. We hear about elites now and again being involved in pedophile rings, famously Jimmy Savile in the UK. But it's all over the place. It's European countries. It's Australia. It's on a state level in the US. But now it seems that it's actually also in Washington, D.C., basically. So the way I stumbled upon it, and the way I think that most people stumbled upon Pizzagate, was actually because we were all trying to help get Trump elected. So as the WikiLeaks came out, they were kind of released in batches by WikiLeaks. These are emails that had been hacked out of John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's head of campaign, his Gmail account. So these had been leaked, and we were going through them, basically trying to find dirt about the Clinton Foundation, you know, pay for play, that kind of standard government corruption. And what we found were a series of emails that appeared to be coded. And at first, no one really understood what the significance of these emails were. So we kind of put them on the back burner. But as more of them came up, and as people started sharing them, places like 4chan, places like Reddit, where there are a lot of people who frequent the dark web, people started pointing out, hey, that's actually well-known pedophile code words they're using there. And so as we started to decode these emails, it came to light that it appears that people who are intimately involved with Hillary Clinton's campaign, Obama's campaign, Bill Clinton's campaign, and just working for the Democratic Party in general, they appear to be involved in child trafficking and child abuse as well. So it's really disturbing, yeah.
It's very disturbing, incredibly disturbing. And yeah, WikiLeaks seem to have opened up a can of worms here, intentionally or not. The DNC emails was remarkably revealing in many regards. But one of the things, of course, that happened, as you said, is that people started to find these garbled, I guess, emails that didn't really make sense. One of the funny ones that I looked into at first was Because I knew about Bohemian Grove, right, for years. Alex Jones broke into Bohemian Grove. He did this documentary, like, I don't know what this is, 15 years ago, maybe, or something. And one of the things that they do is they burn effigies and everything else to Moloch, one of these, old ancient gods, basically. And one of the emails actually contained this issue that one of the staff members or something had sacrificed a chicken to Moloch. And I was like,
yeah, I've actually got this email up right now.
There you go.
It was Cheryl Mills sent an email to Hillary Clinton saying, "I'm sacrificing a chicken in the backyard to Moloch." And Moloch is a god associated with child sacrifice. And the word chicken is used as gay slang for underage boys. So put those two together and you have, I'll be sacrificing a boy in the backyard to Moloch, god of child sacrifice.
Where did these code words was it FBI that did investigations on like trying to decode language that is used because they're involved in illegal things, so they have to start using code words? Or how did these become known?
Well, I mean, the chicken one I actually looked up for myself. I mean, you can find it on the internet right now if you just type in gay slang chicken. It's actually on Wikipedia. It will tell you it's gay slang for underage boys. But for most of the code words, they were shared on like 4chan and Reddit. Like I mentioned, a lot of the people who frequent those forums visit the dark web, something that I don't know much about, but a place where, you know, child pornography is rife. And they said these are well-known paedophile slang. Like this isn't some kind of slang that they've made up themselves. This is just well-known paedophile slang that they're using.
Right. Okay, I see. Yeah, because, I mean, I know that there's consequent investigations. We'll get into that in a moment about, I guess, some of the symbolism used and the fact that there is a whole nomenclature, there's a whole symbolic language that these people use to communicate with each other, basically, of some of their intentions. And I guess let's just go into that now in terms of how this became Pizzagate. There's two aspects, as far as I've understood it. One is, of course, the Comet Ping Pong connection, and then the other one is the fact that pizza was one of these words that was used in many of these emails. Isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why it's called Pizzagate. Firstly, because pizza is a code word for underage girl. And secondly, because a lot of the meeting places and places that are associated with paedophiles are actually pizza restaurants. And they appear to be some kind of front for this black market business that is child trafficking.
What about Comet Ping Pong? How did you come into to this angle? I forget how this was blown open, this one, but it was, I think, through. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, actually, in the WikiLeaks, I didn't bring these emails up, but you can search for yourself. Just go to WikiLeaks.org and you search for Comet Ping Pong, and you'll find that Obama held his fundraisers there, that Hillary Clinton held a fundraiser there this time round, that some of the most rich, powerful people in the whole of Washington, D.C. frequent Comet Ping Pong. It's actually owned by a man who is one of the top 50 most powerful men in D.C., powerful people in D.C. So this is not just any old pizza shop. It's a type of place that holds fundraisers where you've got to pay $1,000 just to get in the front door. And the other thing that turned us on to Comet Ping Pong was once you start looking at it and you start seeing photos of the inside, they have art on the wall that depicts decapitated heads being carried around by people. They have the two-headed phoenix, which is a typical Masonic symbolism. They have graffiti on the wall, which I probably shouldn't even mention. How much stuff can I mention on here?
Oh, you can make anything you want. Let's get it all out in the open. That's what the point is of this show. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's it says things that basically really crude things about sex, and they have this is advertised as a family friendly restaurant, by the way. and it says all ages welcome, and it's like they try to encourage people to bring their kids there. But if you go and look at the bathroom artwork and the graffiti on the walls, it's literally got like guys jacking off while playing ping pong and stuff like that. So it's really not a normal pizza restaurant in any way. And the more you look at it, the stranger it gets.
That's definitely one thing that stood out to me as well, is just the hyper-sexualized imagery was really out of place, you know, in this supposedly family-friendly environment. There are a number of pictures posted on the Instagram account of James Alefantis, who I believe is the guy who runs or owns Comet Pizza, that were, you know, like a picture of a naked man with, you know, a piece of pizza over his crotch and, you know, and obviously referencing the shop. So any place, I mean, I think that's pretty tasteless even for like an adult, you know, just a regular pizza place. But if it's the fact that it is kind of marketed as a place, you know, family friendly for kids, and then it has this, yeah, like you said, like just, you know, degenerate graffiti just makes it, I mean, that should be alarming for anyone, honestly.
Yeah, like when we started discussing this, a lot of people said, well, it's just graffiti. Like, that's not their fault if that graffiti's in their bathroom. Well, actually, you know, you'd think that they would have that graffiti removed because most people would find it offensive. You know, so it just speaks to the kind of people who are going there.
Yeah, if they really wanted to, they could remove it.
Yeah.
A Comet Ping Pong, is it a chain or is it just the one location in DC there?
Well, interestingly enough, I believe it's one location, although the guy who owns it, James Alefantis, owns a lot of, he owns a place next door as well, except that it's a construction company. And next door to that, you actually have another pizza place called Besta Pizza, which has a pedophile symbol as its logo, which they've now taken down since this was released. And then opposite to that, you've got Terrasol, a French restaurant, which also had a pedophile symbol on their web, on the front page of their website, and which Hillary Clinton is photographed as visiting. So you're kind of getting the picture here. And this one is actually next door to,
Beyond Borders?
Something Without Borders. Yeah. Beyond Borders. Which is I think it's supposed to be like an anti-child trafficking or like some kind of humanitarian aid for Haiti.
Yeah, it's a charity focused on Haiti, funded by the Clinton Foundation. And we know that the Haitians aren't particularly keen on the Clintons after, you know, after they effectively robbed their country.
Stole all the money. Yeah, all the donations that was given to them.
And did who knows what else with, you know, Haitian children.
Right. So let's just go with the symbolism here just a little bit for people, because you mentioned the logo and the Besta Pizza, you know, they changed it and everything else. One of the common themes within the symbolism, and again, you detail this, you know, in your videos, Reality Calls, that it doesn't mean that every logo that has, you know, some kind of similar significance is involved in a pedophile network. In some cases, it's just an accident. But one of the prominent ones is you have a larger item and then usually a smaller item of the same inside of that or to the side of it or something, kind of implying this idea of an adult together with something which is smaller, like a child, right? So you have a large one and a small one. And one of the common ones was, I guess, a triangle with a smaller triangle within it, which is just what Besta Pizza had, right?
That's exactly right. And even in one of the WikiLeaks emails, they even say, what do you want, big or little? They're very big. Little is a very significant sort of pedophile slang. I hate the fact that I even know this stuff, but obviously from researching it, I found out.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, and we see that Comet Ping Pong is owned by a corporation called Big Cheese, and cheese is means little girl, like very little girl, like under five. To pedophiles. So by calling it Big Cheese, that's the adult equivalent, which is, I assume, someone who likes very little girls. So it's, you start kind of understanding the slang and it all starts clicking together.
Who's James Alefantis? I mean, he's involved, as far as I'm able to understand so far. He's been photographed with Tony Podesta, the brother of John Podesta. He's been involved in a lot of charity works, fundraiser, things like this, right?
Yes, he seems to be some kind of socialite who, and honestly, I don't know much more about him other than that he was previously married to someone who was very prominent in the political world in DC. I'd have to Wikipedia him or something to find out.
Yeah, he's James Elefantis has been romantically involved with David Brock, who is a very influential person in the Democratic Party.
So he's gay.
He is. Media Matters. I believe David Brock is the chief thereof. He's very very well connected. I think that's probably a big reason why Comet Ping Pong has come to be such a haven or for the elite. As Reality Call said, many very influential people have been pictured going there. Obama, Hillary, I believe, donated some money, and so forth. And yeah, even Soros is through his Open Society Foundation has been linked. So it's definitely a very, very happening pizza place.
Because it's such a small place. That was so interesting. It doesn't mean, of course, just because it's a small facility or location, but it's still, it was like just this kind of, almost like a hole in the wall kind of place. And all these big fundraisers are taking place here. It's, I find it interesting.
It does appear that there are back rooms, underground rooms, possibly it's connected to an underground tunnel as well. Obviously, people who've tried to get in and investigate have been turned away. So that's why we haven't really been able to really fully disclose what's going on inside there, obviously, because we just don't have the authority to do it. This is what the FBI should be doing. I think that it may come out in future that this restaurant is connected to an underground tunnel. There's good reason to believe that it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to comment on the whole issue of, there being private, like separate rooms and whatnot. There was a picture that James Elefantis posted on his Instagram, which I believe is now, he now set to private. And it says, it's got a picture of a piece of paper taped over what appears to be a door. And it says, cell phone use strictly prohibited inside Le Boom Boom Room. And the term boom boom is apparently I don't know this from personal experience, but some of the researchers have been saying that it's associated with countries such as Thailand and Cambodia, used to describe sexual intercourse. That's what I think the the prostitutes use to kind of communicate with their limited English. So, it's all of this stuff is some people are willing to write off every piece of evidence as circumstantial. But when you look at the bigger picture, there's no way that it's all, coincidental. And going back to what we discussed earlier on in the show, we do know that there are elaborate pedophile rings, favorited and involving the elite. And we can only, every now and then we do get kind of a glimpse behind the curtain, with people like Epstein, for example. We know that the elite do these things. And I think a lot of people, they're not even can't even make it to that level. They're not even aware of that. The idea of that there are, child sex rings involving very rich and influential people is too much for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things when you guys brought up, you mentioned the potentiality of underground, facilities or something, or there's more underneath or whatever. Mark Dutroux, which is one, Dutroux, I guess you pronounce his name, an X at the end. He's a Belgian. He was actually a serial killer, but he was also a child molester. He was convicted of kidnapping and torture and sexually abusing underage girls. This is just actually his convictions came from 95 to 96, 1 year period. But he had been doing this for a long time. He was tied to one of the bigger networks in Europe that was tied to all of these elite people, European elite. Apparently there's even some royalty connections and everything here of people who he funneled underage kids too, basically. And he actually had, it's a story that just came out a few months ago now. The Belgian police had done further investigations with the guy, and he planned to, you know, have what he called, quote, an underground city of victims, that he wanted to have a whole, you know, basically facilities in Belgium that could supply the need for all of these establishment, you know, creeps that basically want to have children whenever they come to these places. So, you know, I go back to that point that I mentioned before, from Jimmy Savile to Mark Dutroux to, as you mentioned, Reinhard Epstein, all of these people, it peers up now and then, but it seems that there's no, like, we don't have an Interpol that is, like, cracking down on the whole ring, and they don't seem to be able to, like, squash the head of this thing. It's very worrying to me.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, just another example of a very, you know, a member of the elite involved in, you know, some of this kind of stuff. A man named Robert H. Richards IV, who is, you know, an heir to the DuPont family fortune, was, you know, convicted of raping his 3-year-old daughter, something like that. And he was convicted. He was sentenced to 8 years, but the judge ended up writing it off and saying that, you know, the defendant wouldn't fare well in prison. So he pretty much was able to, he raped his child daughter, and he didn't, to my knowledge, he didn't serve any time. He probably got, 8 years probation. That's what he got. And that's insane because, you know, normally sex offenders, in particular pedophiles, are put into solitary confinement because just the way that prison culture is, you know, people are very, very moral about certain things in there. And yeah, if you're a pedophile and you're in general population, they're going to kill you or they're going to beat you to the point of death. So the idea that he wouldn't fare well in solitary confinement, I mean, what is that? And I mean, this is a perfect example of, you know, there being two different sets of standards. The law doesn't really apply to those who have power. And I mean, I think that's kind of self-evident. Hillary's case, while not related to pedophilia, but her mishandling of classified information is a perfect example of that. We know based off of everything that came to light that she absolutely did. But I mean, here she is, and she's not going to go to jail unless Trump really pushes it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, just going back quickly to James Alefantis, I just quickly did some research, and there are literally just people asking, like, so why is James Alefantis listed as the 49th most powerful man in Washington, D.C.? Because, right, like, there literally is no reason that he should even be considered to be a powerful man in Washington, D.C. But he just basically seems to be a socialite who happens to have been in a relationship with a guy called David Brock, who ran Hillary's super PAC called Correct the Record. And that's it, really. But why does he have so much? Why does he wield so much power? Why is he constantly having all these high-level politicians come over to his pizza place? I don't know. You know, this is the kind of thing where you start asking questions like, does he supply children to them? That is purely speculation, but it starts to make you ask these questions when you see stuff like this.
Yeah, exactly. The food can't be that good at Comet Ping Pong in order to boost him to being one of the most powerful people in, you know, the capital of the most powerful, you know, country in the world. That is something that needs to be appreciated. But yeah, I think he's providing another service, a service that caters to, you know, some very sick needs, but needs that, you know, exist, you know, within the elite to, you know, a certain degree.
You know what? I think there's two aspects to this. And one seems to be, you have people themselves that have been probably molested and abused, and unfortunately carries on the cycle of abuse. Something with the psychological makeup of the damage, if you will, that's done. Some people actually tie this, of course, to, it's called dissociative identity disorder today, DID, but it used to be called multiple personality disorder, basically, right? And I think even you, Reality Calls, you brought this up in one of your videos, even of what some of the artwork that was, I think that was hanging in either Tony or John Podesta's home that was done with, was it Rita Pratt? Was it? Or Rhea Pratt?
Well, there's this woman who, it seems that she's suffered from, well, she's been diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder, and it seems that she was abused at the hands of such a cult. But yeah, when I made that video, there was kind of like this idea going around that that had been hung in Comet Ping Pong. But since then, I haven't been able to find a source to actually say that it was hung in Comet Ping Pong. So I'm kind of reserving that for now.
Okay. Yeah.
But it is, there certainly is other artwork associated with Comet Ping Pong and with Tony Podesta that is just as disturbing, of dead kids, of people who are decapitated. I've got some right here, actually. It's all just very odd. There's some I'm going to release tomorrow, actually, in Tony Podesta's house. It's of a human baby that's kind of half pig, half human baby, and its siblings suckling on its half pig, half human mother. Like, this is in Tony Podesta's house.
He did was it one of the magazines that came and visited his house, and he was quite open? Yeah. That's how much of this became known, I think.
Yes, yeah. It's Washington Life, I think it's called. And this is, they photographed a lot of his artwork. So we have, there's like one of these pictures, it's of a schoolgirl pulling her two dead schoolgirl companions on a makeshift sled. You know, what, why, who would want this on the wall? It's all very odd.
Yeah, it is. And some people are willing to just write all of this off as, you know, oh, it's just art. It's, you know, they just like weird, you know, weird art. But I think aesthetics and, you know, personal artistic preferences are kind of a window into the soul.
I mean,
art is essentially symbolism, and you have to ask yourself what a particular piece is representing. And if it's, I mean, yeah, some of these pieces of art that are apparently linked to Tony Podesta. I'm looking at one right here by an artist by the name of Biljana Djurjevic. I probably butchered that, but yeah. And I'm looking at one, and it appears to be, you know, a prepubescent boy in his underwear in some kind of shower.
An empty swimming pool, I think.
Yeah, right? Like a group shower area, and he's tied up, and his eyes are completely black, and he looks emaciated. I mean, that is just grotesque. Like, the idea that you can find any kind of beauty in that, you know. And once again, going back to the symbolism thing, what is this really representing? What does it say? This isn't like some kind of, you know, abstract critique of you know, modern society or something. You know, it's pedophile art. That's all that it is.
Yeah.
And one of Tony Podesta's prize pieces of art that he loves being photographed with, and which James Elefantis, when he visited Tony Podesta's house, which they seem to do on a regular basis, I assume, or at least he has been photographed there at least once, he took a photo of this sculpture. And this sculpture is an exact replica of one of Jeffrey Dahmer's victims, and Jeffrey Dahmer's a serial killer. It's decapitated, there was no head, and it's hanging from the ceiling by a wire in his stairwell. And again, why would someone want a replica of a serial killer's victim in their house? And if you know anything about serial killers, they love storing parts of their victims' bodies, their victims' you know, clothing, the victim's jewelry. They love keeping these mementos around them. So the fact that Tony Podesta has all these mementos of like dead kids, dead body,
right.
You know, sculptures of dead bodies. Why? What? Who would want that kind of thing to fill up their home? It really doesn't speak very well of him.
Let's talk about Tony a little bit, and then we can get into John Podesta a bit more, because that's kind of the other, I guess it's another angle. It was two different strains, if you will, going, and then these converged at one point with the Podestas, one going to the Comet Pizza, that whole thing. And then, of course, but this began, let's remember that again, with spirit cooking, Marina mm-hmm. Abrahamovich, that whole connection. What can you say mm-hmm. about that?
Right. So actually, this was one of the first emails that really got my attention, was when Marina Abramovich, who her day job is a performance artist, and her art consists of doing things like painting with blood on walls, you know, writing out stuff that most people would recognize as satanic, such as like 666 and like all these kind of symbols and everything, writing spells about, you know, cut your finger and feel the pain and all this kind of thing on the walls. So she invented the concept of spirit cooking, which basically appears to be something to do with some kind of satanic ritual. And she's emailing Tony Podesta, hey, do you want to come over to my place for dinner, for a spirit cooking dinner? And Tony Podesta just emails John Podesta and addresses John Podesta's wife, Mary. Mary, Marina would like us to go to dinner with her. Do you want to come? So they're obviously speaking in a very casual way about Marina Abramovich, which goes to show that they're on like a first name basis with her, and they're just going over to dinner with this woman. And this woman, that I've documented a lot of her her so-called work, her artwork in quotes here. And again, it's just really sick stuff. You know, it's her dressing up as a witch with a massive, big, pointy hat. It's her, you know, doing really grotesque stuff that most of us would not want to do, such as eating directly off a naked woman's body, stuff that looks like blood. Who knows what's actually in there? She has like these kind of celebrations where she has what look like human cadavers, like dead bodies, but they're actually cakes. So people eat these cakes, and it's almost like a kind of simulated cannibalism.
Yeah, I saw that. It was a naked woman that they appeared to be eating, and of course they when it was time to start slicing up the cake, they started with her vagina and her breasts first. So it's just this obsession with the grotesque and with just carnality. It's, you know, there's it's kind of the base, the material, you know, flesh and all of that. I've seen other pieces of her artwork where, yeah, she's just, yeah, like you said, cadavers. It's just like her surrounded by what looks like dead body parts. It's very gross.
Reinhard, remember we talked about this for a little bit. We talked about kind of the, I guess the silliness, a little bit of her and her, some of her approach and stuff like that. It was like kind of toying with some of these, quote, Satanist ideas, right? The fact that it's like, well, do these people really know what they're doing? And I mean, even the fact that her Twitter handle is like ending with 666, you know, it's like, ooh, you know, they're scary people and all that kind of stuff. But I have to say, the more I've been looking into the connection and the consequent kind of networks that she seems to be involved in, it looks definitely more serious today than it did when we spoke about this last time, I must say.
Yeah, definitely. As to the question of whether or not, you know, how serious she is about the occult stuff, because there, you know, a lot of it is presented as art. She did an AMA on Reddit a while back, and someone asked her a question pertaining to, you know, doing ritual, like if you do a ritual, under what context is it art, and under you know, which context is it, would it be considered to be a legitimate occult working? And she replied, well, if you're doing it in public at an art show, then yeah, it's going to be art. But I mean, if you're doing it in the private, you know, in the privacy of your home or something, then that same ritual would be a legitimate occult working. So I think that Marina is, or at least is, sincerely interested in what is commonly known as the occult and magic, esotericism. As far as, you know, how well read she is and how experienced she is within that sphere, I don't think any of us really know. But yeah, you know, I think that the kind of the dynamic is that these people, like, you know, the Podestas and, you know, the politicians, they're kind of plebeians as far as that is all concerned. I don't think they're staying up late reading Aleister Crowley and, you know, Peter Carroll and trying to figure out the secrets of the universe. But I think that they do kind of associate with people who do know their stuff.
Yeah, what do you think, reality calls?
Well, you know, there was this live leak video, but I really should go and download, but I haven't downloaded it yet, where she's basically telling people how to make potions and how to do spells and stuff like this. And she's, you know, she's giving very explicit instructions on quite sick things. They also do such things as consuming people's blood, consuming, you know, semen, consuming all sorts of, you know, things that most people would not consider a normal part of a recipe.
Right.
So,
hopefully not.
I mean, I you've got to be pretty committed to be willing to do that, you know.
Well, one thing you pointed out is her age, which is pretty interesting. I mean, we know they're into these kinds of maybe kind of an obsession with youth, right? I think that's the very attraction by infants and underaged children and things like that in itself. But the fact that she's supposedly 70 years old, right?
Yeah, she's 70 in a couple of months. But everyone who I've shown her photo to, like just who don't know who she is, they've all said late 30s. Some have said early 40s max. So she looks 30 years younger than she is. And that is significant.
Yeah, it's a bit disturbing, I mean, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, because there are quite a lot of photos of her partially naked. So you can see she does not look like a 70-year-old woman at all. And if she'd had plastic surgery, it probably would be fairly evident, because we see 70-year-old women who've had plastic surgery all the time, don't we? But like, she looks better than Madonna. Madonna's had loads of plastic surgery. So right. It does make you wonder whether all this occult stuff is paying off for her in that sense, since I assume that youth and beauty and stuff like that would be something that she would aspire to maintain through this kind of magic with a K. And a lot of celebrities do seem to really look up to her. Like, Lady Gaga seems to be one of her biggest fans. So right. There are a lot of other celebrities you can see her pictured with, because she goes to a lot of these kind of like high profile parties and stuff like that. So they at least think that she's got something going for her. So who knows?
Yeah. And going back to what you were saying about the weird potions and whatnot, I do think that a lot of the elite, the politicians and whatnot, I think that they might be interested in all of this, but I think it's mostly like they want power. These people worship power.
That's why they're in politics, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think that they're willing. They see someone like Marina as like, oh, she knows her stuff. Let's hang out with her and, you know, drink these potions with God knows what. And but yeah. And again, I think these people, the term satanic has been thrown around a lot. Regardless of whether or not they consider themselves satanic, kind of the values that they appear to elevate and espouse could be considered satanic. Traditionally the pentagram, where it has the in its normal form, has at the top is the top part represents spirit, and within Satanism, the pentagram is inverted, which represents matter over spirit. And I mean, that's clearly what we see here with the artwork, with the aesthetics that these people favor. It's focused on sex. It's focused on, you know, blood, biological fluids. I mean, these people essentially do worship like the very carnal, earthly, principle. Yeah.
It's definitely what most lay people, if you say satanic to them, this is exactly the kind of thing they imagine. And like you say, whether they call themselves Luciferian or Temple of Set or whatever they want to identify themselves in their little cult, we view it as satanic. And this is what we call satanic. So, yeah, you do get these odd people saying, well, this isn't technically satanic because satanic is like this. Well, the general public doesn't really care what branch of Satanism it is.
Yeah, you can use the term colloquially. And there's a lot of variation within Satanism, too. So to imply that there is one Satanism would be,
there's one Christianity,
exactly, or one paganism. There are Satanists that believe that Satan is a literal being. Others, Levain Satanists are more kind of, you know, there it's, you know, atheism for people who, you know, enjoy edgy aesthetics.
It almost seems that they are into the most stereotypical type of Satanism, though, in a way. The most base level, the most, like, kind of almost ridiculous, but of course in its most evil form as well, considering the child connections. I don't know if you guys remember when John Podesta is standing holding up his hands, 14 is on one hand and the fish on the other, and someone pulled out the story of Osiris, right? That Osiris was murdered and cut up into, I think it was actually 13 pieces, but the 14th piece, he was cut up by Set, by the way, and scattered throughout the Egypt. And then Osiris' wives tried to kind of find all the pieces and put them together. And the part she couldn't find was the phallus. And that had been eaten by a fish who now was cursed because of this in the River Nile. And Isis made a phallus out of gold, temporary resurrected Osiris, you know, so she could conceive a child. And then the offspring of this was Horus, you know, their child. But so this 14 plus fish is kind of symbolic of the male phallus of power, sex magic, and also resurrection. And Podesta, John Podesta, seems to be very much into kind of like, you know, UFOs and things like that. He's been even, you know, talking on Twitter about how he's been trying to push disclosure with Obama and stuff like that. So he's into a lot of these kinds of esoteric occult angles, but it seems to be a much more darker and sinister side to him, and especially his brother as well.
Yeah, I agree completely. And a lot of, well, there's one email which I just like to read out, actually. It's one of these emails that the first time you read it, you're like, WTH, like, what the fuck? And the second time you read it, you're like, huh, well, maybe this could be explained. And then you go back to the WTH after you've done a bit more research. So basically, this is a quote from the email, and it's to John Podesta. Bonnie will be Uber service to transport Ruby, Emerson, and Maeve Lusanto, 11, 9, and almost 7. So you'll have some further entertainment, and they will be in that pool for sure. So it sounds creepy as hell when you first read it. But a lot of people then pointed out, well, this is, I believe it's their grandma who sent this email, so it wouldn't, she wouldn't possibly be pimping out her grandchildren, would she? But then once you do some more research into what's been going on internationally, you start to realize actually a lot of the parents are in fact pimping out their own children. And this actually seems to be kind of quite common. It's, you know, it's quite a normal pattern. So it just gets more and more disturbing.
Interesting. You know, guys, I think we should take a break here in a little bit. There's a couple of more things I want to clear off the table here before we do that. But just a heads up then, some of the more things we want to discuss here in the second segment is Andrew Breitbart, what he actually knew. Reinhard did a video on this last night, and I think you as well, Reality Calls, brought this up in your latest video about he tweeting about this. A video came out with him talking about John Podesta in a very angry way, should we say. But there's more to this, of course. We need to talk a little bit more about, you know, Jimmy Savile, some of the supposed investigators or some of the conspiracy people that have been looking into some of this. There's a number of murders that have occurred. They've been, as you say, suicided. It seems like we need to get into that as well. So it's much more to discuss here. It's very interesting. And we're really just kind of scraping the surface on this, really. There's so many connections, so many smaller clues, and there's many investigators, if you will, that are helping out to decode much of this and helping to bring this to the surface. But Reality Calls, I wanted you just to mention a little bit about your YouTube channel and kind of give us a plug for that and let people know how they can follow your work. And if there's anything else you'd like to say, you know, either about yourself or something you have upcoming before we take a break.
Sure. Well, if you're interested in this topic, I suggest you go and find my YouTube channel. It's called Reality Calls, and on there I document, you can see all the images, you can see all of the social media posts and everything. Pretty much I try to document all the evidence that people find through forums and stuff. I just try to put that all in like a presented video format so that people can easily digest it and get what's going on without needing to trawl through all these forums and everything. And you can also find me on Twitter, at Reality Calls V.
Very good. We'll have the links up to this, folks, so you can click through from our sites All right, this is very interesting. I'm looking forward to talking more about this. So stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, if you want to join us in the second segment, do go to redicemembers.com. This is an independent, commercial-free, ad-free radio show that is supported by listeners like you. Do join us in the member section. Sign up for a membership with us, redicemembers.com. That's the best place to go to get everything that we do. So do join us there. But yeah, we'll take a short break here, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Reality Calls and Reinhard.
Oh, I am a pizza.
I am a pizza.
With extra cheese.
With extra cheese.
From tomatoes.
From tomatoes.
Sauce is squeezed.
Sauce is squeezed.
Onions and mushrooms.
Onions and mushrooms.
Oregano.
Oregano.
I am a pizza.
Please take me.